Love the warehouse. That was too much fun. Okay. What's so much fun about being able to introduce someone you admire when you're over 40 is that you have to remember that you can't see well. Okay, now I'm suddenly hot too. That also happens when you're over 40. Okay, I'd like to say thank you to the Warehouse Reading Series and to our program director, Erin Ballou, and her assistant, Keith Kopka, for allowing me this honor. Because I am really like poetry fangirl right now. And I do not take this honor lightly. It is such an honor to introduce a living, working poet that I admire. And her name is Yona Harvey. I'm gonna try to say it as often as possible because it's so much fun to say. She is a literary artist living in Pitt. She is the author of the poetry collection that you can purchase back there as soon as this reading is over, Hemming the Water. It's so beautiful. And she's the recipient of an individual artist grant from the Pittsburgh Foundation. Her poems can be found in Jubilat, Gulf Coast, Kalaloo, and many other places. And she also, in addition to all of her degrees, has one of the coolest degrees that I wish I could do too. A Master of Library and Information Science degree. That sounds like so much fun. We have so many things in common. She loves to dig in archival things, and that is like my jam. How Hemming the Water begins is such an interesting journey that I've had the opportunity to look for. I've been reading these interviews that she's had in these wonderful places, and each time I found just a little kernel about her that I was like, that's my friend. Like, I haven't really seen her in a while, but that is really my friend. We have so many things in common. But she has this really cool story about where she lives in Pitt now, which is not too far away from the jazz pianist and composer Mary Lou Williams, where she grew up. And one of her teachers that we share was Yusef Komunyakaa. And while she was walking with him in Provincetown one evening, she says that he said out of nowhere that she should write a poem about Mary Lou Williams. I think that the most, she says, Yusef Komunyakaa has ever said to me. So I said to him, okay. Then thought to myself, I've got to find out more about Mary Lou Williams. At the time, all I had was his poem, My Father's Love Letters. And that was in 1996. And I've been infatuated with MLW ever since. I'll probably be writing about her until I die, until I get it right, she says. That's passion and commitment. Let me tell you, I know what you mean by that. Who is Mary Lou Williams? I asked myself. She's this pianist and composer that was born in 1910, not too far from here in Atlanta, Georgia. She was a musical prodigy. She began performing as a child. Throughout her career, she adapted to changing musical styles, working in swing, blues, and bebop at a very early age. I repeat, this genius, this obsession with it that Yona has really been driving her work. She did some really cool things, Mary Lou Williams, in Harlem, because she shared her apartment as an opportunity for a gathering place for musicians. And it was where she mentored talents like, y'all, get this, Thelonious Monk, Dizzy Gillespie, and Benny Goodman. Yeah, I'm glad I got to find out who she was, too. Questions asked by Yona from other interviewers, like, whose poems affect your work? She's listed poets like Toy Derricotte and Cornelius Eady. And her writing space was the most interesting answer for the question she received. She has this interesting shelf life that she shares in her house. So she has books everywhere, which is like my dream world. She has this back door covered with interesting photographs and cards and clippings of things. And she says that she has those of strong women, you know, powerful women, a few troublemakers. They bring things out in the way they dress or behave. And books. There are clippings about books I want to remember to order. Stuff like that. I'm a little bit of a, what do you call it? And then the response from her husband was, hoarding. I'm that too. It's a beautiful thing. I like to call it pastiche. this other interview from the Volta, and I say this other because she's been interviewed a lot about what she does in her work, and that says a lot about us having the opportunity to have her share it with us tonight. She talked about how she shaped her manuscript, and for all the students in the room, including myself, man, this was good to know. She says, as you may have suspected from the previous answer that she gave about how she's inspired about what she does, that it was difficult for her. That manuscript was written, scrapped, revised, and set aside for over 10 years. It was insanity, she says. My concept of time is totally distorted, so I repeatedly failed at ordering the manuscript in a kind of beginning, middle, end format. Finally, as I came to understand myself, my thoughts, and what I valued, I was able to order the manuscript through colors, sounds, ideas. And she says that Mary Lou Williams was her anchor. And that gives me so much hope. I don't know what to do with my manuscript. That's for you, Curb. So, I just love to know what inspires writers. We all do. Her answers are so much like my life that I just get the chills. Like, I totally get it. She says her husband and children and her dog, and she says, seriously, her dog, and her dear friends, and that they're all a team for her. And she's also inspired in the process making for herself. How many times, she says, does Diana Ross toss off a wig in Lady Sings the Blues? We are who we are when our wigs are off. No eyelashes, no foundation, no lipstick. I did my best. I did have to put on gloss just for you. But I did remove everything else, Yona. She says her friend Doug Kearney is a killer reader. He is the bomb. And now that I know that they're great friends, man, I'm so jealous too. She says that her husband is a killer listener, a debater, and that her kids and their dog, they're just so full of humor and joy, are totally uncensored. And she says, wow, so these people really helped me to think and speak without any barriers. She says that her scalp was totally aerated. Love that. So her next project that she's working on, before I tell you a little bit about what she's going to read to wrap things up, is that she's spending some time writing about women, which is something that I also do and love, and she's calling her project The Performance Perms. And for those of us who don't know, in the Black culture, we have curly hair, kinky hair, hair that does all sorts of things. And when we relax it, we call it a perm, okay? And I was just like, ooh, I just have to know what this is all about. And she says in her performance perms that she is going to feature dynamic women, women with their dynamic hair and their dynamic defiances. And I am thrilled because she's listed greats like Tina Turner. And she is my idol, always. So, without further ado, I'm going to tell you that in this collection, Hemming the Water, which you can purchase as soon as she's done with her reading, it speaks to the futility of trying to mend or straighten a life that is constantly changing, is what reviewers have said. And they say that here the spiritual and the secular commingle in a fierce fragmentation, lonely tune. So please join me in welcoming, and what an honor, the wonderful, talented, feminist, womanist, beautiful Yona Harvey to the Warehouse stage.
Thank you. There's no way I can ever live up to that. That's ridiculous. Thank you so much. Let's see here. Oh, cool. Thank you, Aaron. What are you doing? What signal am I getting? Can you hear me? Just a little. Oh, yeah, that's perfect. Yep. Thank you. That's good. All right. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Keith and Laura. Everybody. David, Barbara. It's very warm here. I like it. Even though y'all keep saying it's cold. I'm like, it feels good. It was snowing when I left Pittsburgh. So it's always just hard getting started. I think I'll start with one of those performance perm poems. The other secret is that sometimes we say perm and we mean poem. That's the kind of hidden thing too. So I'll read my favorite one so far, I guess. Performance perm. I'd rather be a blind girl, Etta James. Lord, Etta, something told me my mama waited too long to mention it was over. When I saw you with that girl and y'all was talking, her neighbor saw you with that girl and y'all was talking, cueing your music all summer long. Something deep down, scotch. Something deep down, water. Something deep down, gin. And something deep down, you. Something deep down said it was over when I saw you. Gone and cry, girl. She knew how to keep company. All my muscles undone now. Girl, I shoulda. Something told me. Something told me. Something told me had your name. Etta. 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 And I'd rather let the men holler after me. And I'd rather let the women shake their heads. Something told me, relish the cool. I was just sitting here thinking of a single ice cube. Thinking, melted. Thinking at the bar counter. Thinking, thinking, thinking. Far from conversation. You sang the songs, and I'm scared to be by myself. Your mama warned you not to. And I'd rather be by myself. Yo. Yo. And yo. I see y'all know what I'm talking about when I say sweet sin and excess. And yo, I see y'all know what I'm talking about when I say cigarettes. And yo, and yo, and yo, and yo, the smoke. When I look down into my glass and say yo, summer, yo, and yo, and reveling its yo, damp sky, yo, and yo, and yo, and yo. When I saw you with that same girl, and I'm scared to be by myself, and holler after me, too long, something told me. I'm in that weird place, you know, between the book and the next book. I'll go back. I'm going to read Sound, Part 4, Notes on Polyphony. And this just comes from, this is the short version, just my overthinking things all the time and trying to shake that off. At first, I felt my head was too much with me. Take it off, I heard a voice say. Your head, you got to take it off. So I closed my eyes and took my head by the ears and turned. It came off easy, my head, like all my life, it was waiting for me to unscrew it. So I sat it down quietly beside me, and this allowed my mouth, which all before had been sewed shut, to open and sing. What have I to dread? What have I to fear? And my hips, torso, and upright arms trembled at that sudden a cappella. I want to thank you for hearing this small trickle in a sea. I am trying to steady myself as I wait. There's a bored shark coloring the water. There's a girl cradling her head somewhere. She is lost, and someone has left her at the shore without a song, without a whistle. There is only her blood and the blood of her siblings. There is only the sun, like the glimmer of the state's buttons erasing the girl. You have placed her in my throat, and now I can reattach my head. And the girl is inside me. She can move now as my body moves, my neck, my head nodding. Thank you. Mother love. I don't know why I always say this, but I think it's important. It fits somehow, that my mother is a Pentecostal minister, but she's also she's a very complicated person. She's also the person who taught me about Etta James and Earth, Wind, and Fire, and you know, she's very a lax Pentecostal. And we have a complicated relationship. But this poem, Mother Love. Because you are not April or June or January or slush-caked boots or snow falling or melting or moving in from the northwest plains, one cold coffee of a late night, my bruise, my blade, my thorn, I love. Here in the fold of a cramped journal, I've nothing to whine about, to hate, or to feel indifferent to. I write with the ink that is your name, dark blood in the droop of a pale handkerchief. When the baker runs her hands against the smooth flour and sugar tins with their satisfied lids, she is not like you. She is not your sewing machine in danger of falling over the edge. No. You're at least 13 clocks in the span of two rooms, each off by a minute or two. Lord, help me when they chimed. And so, my love is awkward and ill-timed. Here's the oversized window you keep looking out of. What trip are you planning, you never punctual retired secretary, you flat-ended film, you holy shock of self-absorption, polyester panties, cotton-knit pajamas, you paper jam, you yesterday, you minister of excuses, you tardy bell,
parcel, package, unexpected visitor, unanswered phone call, shout from the basement, rainstorm, static in the busted speaker, hearing aid, headache, cabinet void of tea bags and measuring cups, passive, aggressive, stomach ache, 1.5 minutes, too long, day late, dollar short, mother of mothers, you, mother, you. Thank you. And, that came back around really quickly when I had my own daughter. So, hurricane for my daughter who was born in New Orleans but raised in Pittsburgh, where she got on this carnival ride, also called the hurricane. Hurricane. 4 tickets left, I let her go. Firstborn into a hurricane. I thought she escaped the floodwaters. No, but her head is empty of the drowned. For now, though she took her first breath below sea level. Mama, let me go. She speaks what every smart child knows. To get grown, you unlatch your hands from the groan. And up, and up, and up, and up. She turns, latched in the seat of a hurricane. You let your girl what? You let your girl what? I did so she do. I did so she do. So, girl, you can ride a hurricane. And she do, and she do, and she do, and she do. She do make my river an ocean. Memorial, Baptist, Protestant, birth. My girl walked away from a hurricane. And she do, and she do, and she do, and she do. She do take my hand a while longer. The haunts in my pocket I'll keep to a hum. Katrina was a woman I knew. When you were an infant, she rained on you. And she do, and she do, and she do, and she do. I feel like I'll read things that are new. Even though that makes me kind of nervous. It's weird reading things about the cold weather and the snow in Florida, but I guess like the setup can be that for me, I never get really used to the snow and the cold, and kind of like being in January, the month of January is like being in outer space. So if you kind of think about it that way, it can apply to lots of regions. The Dream District, January. January, I'm lost inside your industrial gray. My rig at the ready, my truck trucking, its ginormous tires flat ironing the road. Vivica Fox's mantra on the CB radio, Black Mambo, Black Mambo. More white static and fade. No word from the ladies out there. They know and don't know. They say and don't say. Don't say January. I'm driving past your peculiar highway sign painted Pasadena. January, you know I'm nowhere near. Pennsylvania's no California, and getting lost exhausts me. January, I pull the air horn on your fog, pull over at a coffee house that looks like a house I know, but where are the woods, the village, and the goddamn snow? All my guilt and shame on the mount of books and poems I ought to know. Now, honey, read this, the Tina Turner look-alike owner says. Hands me her copy of an anti-fracking manifesto derived from ancient tea brewing rituals. And by the way, that's all we serve. No coffee at this coffee house. Our specialty is green, Tina says, grown local by the community. All those T's and E's should put me at ease, but my bearings are lost. Where am I? Pasadena, Pennsylvania? Well, make it black and steep it long, I say. The day is wearing down on me. Even though my son's not here, I feel like I should read a poem that has a boy in it. That is so lame, but but it's good karma. The baseline. NBA season, the finals, and I was in a neurosurgeon's waiting room awaiting Arrow's test results. He'd slammed his skull on the baseball court and his pupils pulsed cartoony. Black spirals and asterisks and loony exclamations. His dizzy days had placed us in the teeth of the clipboards of chance snapping. Dr. Phil was interviewing a boy who'd killed his mother, specifically bashed his mother's head with a sledgehammer and set her house on fire. It's ritual, said the doc. It's self-soothing. To bash someone's head? To set a house on fire? I don't know, doc. I don't know, America. I don't know. I forget how daytime gnaws us till evening if we linger too long in its jaws. Everything wrong with us seemed to glow from the insides of a flat screen. I wondered what was up next. A razor? A switchblade? A machete? Little bits of bone? The boy's little blonde brother nearly dying too? I don't know, homemakers. I don't know, ratings. A nurse walked Arrow to an exam room. Free throws and foul shots chatter, winners and losers, favorite players. LeBron James slept somewhere between games. I was stressed about Grand Theft Auto and Netflix. How many times had Arrow hit his head in the past few years? Bring it in, Arrow said when I joined him. Chill, he said. Did this mean he was the kind of son who'd hug his mother tightly before turning away? The kind of kid who'd leave home at 12 and assemble a band and adorn his fro with feathers and cowries and swear he learned the birds and the bees from the internet? I don't know, worst fears. What was the last thing Arrow remembered? A thwacking, the court's distant border. I forget how competitive he gets. I forget how fragile. Diagnosis, no games, 3 weeks, supervised exercise, rest. I don't know. Inevitable. My mother didn't care much for television. Turn that stuff off, she'd say. Talk to me. What makes a child turn? How does a head bash in? I forget how mustache begins in shadow, how hairlines fade gradually. 1 year, Cleveland fans burned LeBron's jersey. I don't know Christians. I don't know Cavaliers. I forget how every son leaves us at least once. I forget how quiet a house without television. Son, don't bring any spiders home, or lovers, or trash talk. I forget how we leave those anyway. I forget how hypnotic the television. Eat your dinner, son. Eat your dinner. And I don't know where to end. I guess I have this little tiny short poem. I'll end with that, and it's called That. It really is called That. That. I grew up with pickles. I slept in the attic. Cigarettes, sheets laced with smoke. The heat of my father's brother's old room. Larry Blackman painted for effect, and Chaka Khan's hips more like a kiss, if a kiss could walk when it came to life. If a kiss could have hips and legs and ass, well, I wanted that. And if the colors could sweat and strip me down to my slip, well, I wanted that too. Nobody knew what I was thinking up there, though maybe they wanted that. Thank you.